This is Peak Community, Studio 809 Podcast.
It's election time.
Voting is not just a privilege.
It's a responsibility.
We'll talk with an exceptional candidate.
All that and more on this episode of Loving the Springs, the podcast where we celebrate the best and elevate the rest.
Let's get this party started. I'm Dave Gardner.
And I'm Al Brody.
We're coming to you from the Studio 809 Community Podcast Studio at The Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs. And boy, do we love it here.
We do. Today we have a scientist and political candidate in the house. And there she is, River Cassin. Welcome to Loving the Springs, River.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I think Al and I are both fans of scientists, so we're your friends.
Awesome.
So, River, you are running for U.S. House of Representatives District 5, and your district is virtually all of Colorado Springs and a little bit beyond that, right?
Yeah. So it goes as far north as Palmer Lake, as far south as Fountain, as far west as Cascade, so basically all the way up to Pikes Peak, and out east to Peyton.
Before we get into the hard details, I'm curious about your background.
Yeah.
You're a scientist and a teacher. I understand you have several degrees, even an economics degree.
Yes, I have three. My first degree was in economics, and then I decided to switch majors, but I did finish out the econ degree. And my second degree was a bachelor's in physics and energy science, and then I got my master's in just physics.
Well, that's quite a switch from economics, because I think economics is just folk science.
Well, the math for the two are relatively the same. They both involve quite a bit of calculus, and once you get calculus down, the math kind of gets easier from there.
But did you get kind of neoclassical economics education, or by any chance ecological economics?
Probably a little bit more classical. It was from Arapahoe Community College, so it was really more of the macro and micro basics. And, you know, personally, I'm a big fan of Keynesian economics. I think the largest issue for someone who has not studied economics that I see is the confusion behind, like, socialism and Keynesian economics. Keynesian economics is part of the capitalistic system that allows individuals who are basically paycheck to paycheck, if you give those individuals more money, it results in a multiplying effect where they're going to put money directly back into the economy, thus stimulating it. Yeah, not to nerd out or anything.
That was a moment of nerdiness.
It was good. I like it.
Well, what motivated you to jump into this race?
Well, I didn't see any other women jumping into this race at the time. And that's what I really felt like we needed. You know, I'm the first woman to run for this seat since Roe v. Wade's been overturned. And in addition to that, I'm also the youngest person to run for this seat. And, you know, when elected, I'd be the youngest person out of the state of Colorado, just to give us a little bit of history. And, you know, young people have the least say right now in our current political system, but they have the most at stake. We have, you know, we're drowning in debt. A lot of the Gen Z and millennial generation don't own homes. We're worried about the environment. We're worried about whether or not we're going to have water in the future. And it's impacting our decisions right now. It's difficult to put yourself in the mindset of thinking about the next generation or even raising the next generation when you're constantly in survival mode.
Well, you brought up your youth, so I think I'm allowed to ask you how old you are, or at least for a range, 30 to 40? Or
That's a pretty good guess. I'm 27.
No way. How did you get so many degrees so fast?
Well, I did start in high school. I was a concurrent enrollment student, so I took classes at the community college while I was in high school.
Wow, so you are a youngster.
Yeah.
That would be great, because we have way too many old folks.
Well, I don't think about too many, but we do need more diversity of our ages in our political system.
So I'm wondering here, you are young by any standard, especially in government. And what is the youngest person in Congress right now? Do you know?
The youngest person would be Frost. He's a representative in Florida, and he was elected at the age of 25.
Okay, so you're close to that.
Yeah. I would be the youngest woman. The youngest woman right now is AOC.
And she's getting closer to 40, right?
I believe she's in her early 30s.
early. I thought she started in her early 30s. Maybe
she
hasn't
been around that long, has she?
No, but yeah, she's
second term or third term.
Yeah, she's in her early 30s. And what I find interesting is that for a lot of women, the frontal cortex of your brain develops faster than it does for men. We mature at a faster rate. In other words, not to trash talk men or anything.
No, I'm not arguing with that.
This is shocking news.
we're old enough to understand that.
But I do find it interesting that all of our representatives who are in their 20s are also men. And I think there's a little bit of like sexism and, you know, tied into the ageism, where a lot of people don't really find younger women as appealing for their representation. They're worried that we don't carry as much respect, I assume. But we, you know, have as much intelligence as men, and we develop a little bit faster. I have to say that. And so
I'm thinking a poster boy for that would be Matt Gaetz.
Yeah. Yeah. He definitely doesn't act his age.
No, definitely hasn't matured yet.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no, you're good. But yeah, I do feel like we need younger representation right now, and we need more women representing us as well. And we have a shortage of young women representatives, especially. So I feel like I fit the bill for that.
It's time.
Go Gen Z.
Thank you.
It's time to turn things over to the women. The men have fouled things up. They've been in power far too long. And
at least equal representation. I think we should shoot for that.
Yeah. We do make up about 50% of the population. We should probably be 50% of the representatives.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, I didn't mention you're the Democratic candidate. And
yes.
The seat that you're running for has been held by Doug Lamborn, a member of the Republican Party, who's been in. We've had to live with Doug Lamborn for close to 18 years now, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was probably in Republican hands before him. I don't recall what the history before that was.
Yeah, it's been Republican for a while, and it's been trending Democratic for the past few decades, actually. So about, you know, before Doug Lamborn was elected, we had a roughly 30-70 split every election cycle here. And then around the time that Doug Lamborn got elected was also when we started moving towards a 40-50 split. We had a 13-point jump in 2008. Jay Fawcett, I believe, was his name, and he ran against Doug Lamborn. Mm-hmm. And then we've been kind of trending towards a more 50-50 split ever since. There was another big jump. Stephanie Rose Sprawling had 10 points more than a Democrat that ran before her. Mm-hmm. And there's been, when there has been a decrease, there's always been kind of a reason behind it. For Misty Plowright, for example, she ran very late. She didn't get a whole lot of support behind her very early on. And then, unfortunately, her fundraising didn't really match out. She got less than 20 grand for her entire election cycle. There just wasn't as much support for her, and she did jump in pretty late. And then David Torres is another example. There was a lot of political burnout here for the past few decades. And so David Torres also, you know, he raised less than $30,000. There's only been a handful of times where you've seen a Democrat that's broken six figures. And all of those times, we tend to get at least 40%. So that's pretty helpful. But what I feel like the biggest difference that we've also seen is that there is a demographic shift here in Colorado Springs. We're predicted to surpass the population of Denver by 2030, and that's in large part because younger people are moving here. And there's two sides to that. From Denver, which is, you know, I'm from Littleton originally, my rent when I left Denver was $700 to rent a bedroom out of someone's house. When I moved to Colorado Springs about 10 years ago, my rent for a studio apartment down on the southern part of Colorado Springs was about $600 a month. It was like maybe 400 square feet. And now, me and my partner are paying about $2,400 a month for a two-bedroom. It's a little bit nicer. We're more in the center of Colorado Springs. But the rent has more or less just, you know, kept increasing. And I'm paying more now than the prices were in Denver when I left. But sure, a lot of people who live in Denver, especially young people, are looking for more affordable housing, and they're kind of shifting their way towards Colorado Springs. And likewise, we see a shift from Colorado Springs down to Pueblo even. And so I think this is partly responsible why we're seeing both Pueblo County and El Paso County start to shift more blue. The younger voters here are also more likely to be unaffiliated. So the average age of a registered unaffiliated voter here in this county is 48, compared to the average registered Democrat at 68 and the average registered Republican at 69.
So I have a question on that. The demographics of Gen Z is many don't vote, or at least they're not registered to vote.
Yeah.
Do you have the numbers for them in this community?
I don't have the exact numbers of how many Gen Z individuals are here, but we do have four major universities. We have UCCS, Colorado College, Pikes Peak State College, and the Air Force Academy. And I know between Pikes Peak State College, UCCS, and Colorado College, there's roughly 30,000 students, and then I don't know the attendance of the Air Force Academy off the top of my head.
Air Force Academy, as far as voting goes, in this specific CD5, it wouldn't really apply because many of them would be registered elsewhere.
Yes. A large portion of our military is usually registered elsewhere. However, their spouses are more likely to vote here. And on that note, I've spoken to a lot of military spouses who complained that they don't really get enough credit for being here. For example, I spoke to one woman who said that on Fort Carson, she's had to wait 2 years to get her child in daycare. And she's effectively had to play single mom this whole time as well. So I don't know why there's such a child care shortage or why we have to wait so long to send kids to child care, but that's impacting our national security at this point.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So in short, based on what you've just shared with us over the last 5 minutes, you're a serious candidate. There's no assumption that you're going to lose.
Well, I certainly wouldn't be running if I thought I was going to be losing.
Well, you know, there are some positions where the Democratic Party has, you know, talked somebody into being a candidate just so that there'd be a name on the ballot. Let's be honest about that. This isn't one of those cases at all.
No. And this was pretty competitive. There was at one point five Democrats running for CD5. Two of us made it past the assembly. And of course, one of us made it past the primary. And Joe,
congratulations,
Thank you, by the way.
Yeah, that was a pretty good pretty good surprise to a lot of people, right?
Yeah, I won by 489 votes.
It's a win.
Yeah.
It's racing.
Yeah, and Joe is a pretty good candidate. I think the reason we both worked as hard as we did was because of how competitive the primary got, which has honestly helped our campaigns as well, my campaign. And Joe's come back and has helped me a little bit. He's helped him with debate prep. And, you know, that's always very helpful, especially when you're going up against someone like Jeff Crank. He says a lot of words, not necessarily saying a lot, but he does say a lot of words.
Well, you brought him up, but I wanted to talk about him a little bit anyway. So let's just start with the basics. What do you think are the main differentiators between you and Jeff Crank? Jeff is the GOP candidate, your main opponent.
Well, we're pretty different. I mean, we both have very similar, you know, respect for the community here. But he doesn't seem to understand what it's like to be paycheck to paycheck or what it's like to be in a position of, you know, maybe you can't start a family. Maybe you can't buy a home. Maybe you can't move on to the next phase of your life, so to speak. And he very much wants to, you know, cut spending. But I don't think that's actually going to be good for our economy. What we need to do is make sure that the people have more money to spend. And if you're only cutting taxes for the wealthy, you're not actually giving anyone more money to spend. Because the wealthy are ultimately just going to keep it in their savings account. But I think the biggest differences are going to be, you know, how much we value education, how much we value the public education system specifically, and how much we value individual freedom. You know, I'm very pro-choice, and he's very openly pro-life or anti-choice, as it should really be called.
Mm-hmm.
And in that last debate, when he did call himself pro-life, I asked, you know, if he would support universal child care, but the moderator decided to cut off our bickering at that point. But I don't think he would be in support of a universal child care system. He's not even in support of a public school system. And we need to have a more educated population. You know, education is the one thing no one can ever take away from you. And if you don't have an educated population, you have a population that is easily manipulated. And it makes me question, why would people want to strip away an individual's right to educate themselves and to have knowledge of literacy within our country?
Well, that just goes along with the Republican Party, it seems like, these days.
Well, you're an economist, so you know the answer to the question.
Let me go on a brief Jeff Crank rant. He served as CEO and as Colorado State Director of Americans for Prosperity, which the billionaire Koch brothers, you know, big oil industry barons, started that. So he basically had been carrying water for the Koch brothers for a lot of his political career. He's endorsed by Americans for Prosperity Action. He's endorsed by the National Rifle Association, endorsed by Donald Trump, and by House Speaker Mike Johnson. So that tells me a lot right there.
Yeah. And if you go to his website, it tells you basically the same thing. And when I've been canvassing, you know, there's a lot of undecided voters who don't, you know, they don't necessarily want to just vote for whoever knocks on their door. They say, oh, cool, thank you for introducing yourself. I'll go look you up. And I tell them, good, please look me up. Please look my opponent up. Because if you look at both of our websites, you're going to see where I stand on the issues. And you're going to see a landing page to sign up to be Crank's volunteer on his end. And I don't understand that. I feel like you would want the people to know where you stand on the issues. But I think we're also running two very different campaigns. I'm running to give people reasons to vote for me. He's running trying to not give people reasons to not vote for him.
Very well said. Yeah. So are you hoping, once elected, to use Doug Lamborn as a role model, and you want to conduct yourself the way he did for the last 18 years?
Well, I'd hope to accomplish something, actually.
Oh.
Well, I mean, Lamborn represented us for 18 years, long enough for an entire generation to be bored and now vote against him. And, you know, in those 18 years, he got us a post office, he got a cemetery for veterans here. But we need a representative that's going to take care of people while they're still alive. We need a representative that's actually going to do something about the VA, that's actually going to try and hold them accountable. I want to have a secret shopper program that reports back to Congress with how quickly someone was able to get mad at the VA, what kind of mental health services they were provided, and what kind of questions they were asked in their examination, and were those questions justified? Because we need to speed up the process and not have so much bureaucracy. What I worry about is that Jeff Crank is going to be a continuation of Doug Lamborn, and that's going to be more years of not really having a true representative for our community.
Yeah, Lamborn's been pretty invisible, I think kind of disrespectful, not kind of, but disrespectful to the local voters by not participating in debates and really hardly showing up here.
I remember when Doug Lamborn was in his primary, and there were several, I want to say seven or more, much more well-qualified individuals for the congressional seat. And he beat them all by a substantial margin. And it was because he was the most far right of all of them. Most of the others were significantly more moderate. And to watch that when he won, that's what the people were looking for. And I think the demographics change that has happened and is happening is the greatest hope for you and for moving in a different direction. We went from selecting the person who was bulletproof in Congress. They would give Lamborn the things that nobody else could handle because they knew he really couldn't be opposed. So the fact that you're running now and you don't have to run against Lamborn, I think is ideal. And I hope that you gain the momentum and can get people to see there really is an opportunity for a different way of doing things here in Congressional District 5.
I think it would be nice to break the stranglehold on this position that the Republicans have had.
Yeah. And like I've said, we've been trending towards the Democratic Party for a while. And, you know, I feel like an open seat is almost like a blessing for once. It might be that final push that we need to finally cross that 50% mark.
A lot of good reasons for Republicans to vote for you as well, just because I don't think Crank is a very good-looking candidate. He's just got a lot of baggage.
Yeah, especially when it comes to his donors and how much money he's getting. And it makes you wonder, you know, who is he going to be representing? The committees that he says he wants to be on matches Lamborn. And there's only one reason why he would want to be on the Committee of Natural Resources. It's because of the Koch brothers. He doesn't care about natural resources. He's never studied natural resources. He doesn't know anything about them, as far as I'm concerned.
Extraction is taking as much as you can for as long as you can until it's not profitable, period.
Yeah.
Should we talk about energy policy?
Yes.
Sure.
Let's.
Yeah. Well, what we got to do is make sure that we move towards a renewable energy economy. And that means, you know, relinquishing our dependency on oil. We spend billions of dollars a year. Rather, it's defending these resources overseas. Rather, it's educating children that we send overseas with their families. Rather, it's drilling for oil here domestically. And it's not good for us. It's not good for our ecosystem. And it's going to end up killing us all. I mean, it's going to make our planet less livable, less habitable. And the fact of the matter is the vast majority of us are so much closer to being a climate refugee than we are to being a billionaire. And with that, we need to you know, recognize the fact that if we don't prioritize the climate, nothing else really matters. You know, and I often say if everything's a priority, then nothing is. But this is one thing that needs to be a priority. In Colorado, one of the biggest natural resources that we need to look into is the relinquishing of lithium and replacing of sodium ion. So one of the things that Lamborn attempted to do was increase the mining of lithium within the Colorado River. There's a lithium supply within the Colorado River close to the Utah border. And lithium is a rechargeable battery. It's often used in like Teslas, it's used in cell phones, laptops, etc. But there are alternatives. And this is what it means when you give science the wheel for once, when you put funding towards coming up with better alternatives. We know that sodium ion is less toxic. It's not going to kill our water supply. It's not as horrible to mine. And at the same time, it doesn't really cost that much more. It's a little bit heavier, but most solar panels are just going to stay in one place anyway. So it doesn't matter if they weigh a little bit more. And what I want to do is make sure that we protect our water supply for future generations and don't prioritize profit over people.
So is sodium ion what we used to use for streetlights?
If they're rechargeable, we could use sodium ion.
It wasn't an energy storage system. It was the actual filament.
Are you thinking sodium vapor?
It's something. I'm just wondering since you're a scientist.
You're good. So,
that's such an old technology.
That's what we've replaced. But
The similarity between sodium and lithium is that they're both alkaline earth metals. So how you're able to kind of make that battery rechargeable is by using the ions, because electricity is just a flow of electrons. And so these alkaline earth metals that kind of have those extra electrons allow that recharging of a battery effectively.
Okay.
What about guns?
So I don't want to necessarily take away everyone's guns, but we do need to have some restrictions. The vast majority of our school shootings are committed by teenagers, age 18, 19, and 20, but predominantly under the age of 19. The individual who shot Arapahoe High School was 18. His name is Carl Pearson. And the individuals who committed the massacre at Columbine High School were all teenagers as well. What I'd like to do is increase waiting periods for individuals that are under the age of 21 or have a mandatory mental health assessment, which I think would be reasonable, especially for young teenage boys who might be scared to even seek out mental health resources or think it's beneath them even, which goes a long way. If you think that, you know, something's okay for one gender but not for yours, then, you know, why do you think so less of the other gender? But I do feel like if we're going to have, you know, to protect our Second Amendment, as we should, we have to make sure we have appropriate restrictions. And we have to recognize that the frontal cortex of most teenagers are, quite frankly, just not developed enough to handle deadly firearms when a large percentage of mass shootings are committed by teenagers, unfortunately. We need to look into how do we restrict these shootings. And so it is going to look like waiting periods for individuals under the age of 21, or even just required mental health evaluation, something more rigorous that makes young people, you know, have to wait a little bit longer or have to reconsider before purchasing a firearm.
I'm with you.
Thank you.
You've mentioned the climate crisis. Is there more to be said about what we might expect from you in Congress on that front?
Yeah. Well, as far as our district is concerned, thankfully we are not at risk of hurricanes, but we are at risk of having a dwindling water supply. And so what we need to look at is water conservation. I kind of like what they've done in Nevada. And oftentimes, you know, what you see at local politics can often get adapted into federal politics. But I like what they've done in Nevada, where they kind of recycle their water usage. We can do that here. But what I'd also like to do is, you know, incentivize people to not have a large water usage problem. You know, we need to prioritize our water for agricultural communities. And right now, about a third of our water is used for that. But the other two-thirds of that water, half of that is used just for watering lawns. Only about a third of the residents in this district even own their property and thus can water a lawn. So most of us really have very little say in water conservation, what we can do. For me, the highest water usage I might have might be my shower. But if I, you know, save a few gallons by showering for a few extra minutes less, that's not really going to have as big of an impact as, you know, not using the gallons of water to water a lawn. And so I want to look towards, you know, tax incentives for people to not have to have anything that isn't drought resistant take up a huge amount of land. Mm-hmm. And that's going to, that might mean having some intervention from the Environmental Protection Agency before we, you know, expand our city or build more houses.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but the Southern Delivery System, are you familiar with the pipe that goes from the Arkansas River, or Pueblo Reservoir, actually, up to our community.
Mm-hmm.
We spent almost $2 billion on a pipe to provide water for Banning Lewis Ranch's development, but it could also provide water for us. So as far as Colorado Springs goes, I don't think we're going to have a water shortage for decades. And this has, when we bought it, which is more than 10 years ago, we bought it with a 40-year bond.
Mm.
So we're putting that responsibility onto your generation, even though you had no say in it. It's just there. So I was wondering, because we're in an unusual position having more water than we actually need. Drought is a choice for us. And this is a pipe that was the most foolish water project on the planet, because we're pumping water 1,600 feet vertically up to get it from the source to where we are. But we did it. And now we have this investment. I just wonder how that plays into all of the policy for this district, especially, and especially Colorado Springs.
That's a good question. I don't know too much about that, to be completely honest with you. But what I do know is that the aquifers here have been depleting of water, and that has a direct correlation to the decrease in snow that we've been getting. Because a lot of this water that we do get here, whether it's from Pueblo or Colorado Springs, ultimately the source is snow melt. And since the temperature has been rising, we've been getting less snow. And so the amount of water that we're using is now less than the amount of water that we're getting.
Well, I'll add to that and help you out a little bit with that. Most of the water that is being pumped uphill from Pueblo Reservoir via the Southern Delivery System, most of that has come from the Colorado River Basin.
And the Arkansas River Basin.
No, the water, it's pumped into the Arkansas River Basin from the Colorado River Basin. A call on the Colorado River, which is increasingly, I mean, it's actually starting to happen. I think that's what's concerning you. I mean, the SDS could be turned off just by the climate crisis and the fight among, how many states is it? Is it seven states that use Colorado River water?
And I really don't want to get into the nitty-gritty, but Colorado goes west, Arkansas goes east. I don't think those two...
We're pumping a lot of water over the Continental Divide and dumping it into the Arkansas River, and then we pick it up at Pueblo Reservoir and pump it up here. Yeah.
That's news to me, but okay.
I don't know how much of that you know, but it seemed to me that, you know, the fact that water from the Colorado River is not a sure thing was probably feeding into your concerns some, I would think.
Well, I mean, both the Colorado River and the Arkansas River have been decreasing in their height. I mean, you can see it if you just go and visit them. I mean, you can see the discoloring on the rocks. Especially if you go in the summer where the water should be at its highest. For example, that's when, you know, whitewater river rafting is at its height.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the snow melted at its height. Because, you know, hypothetically, we should have snow year-round in the mountains. But what we see is that there's, you know, it's feet and feet less every year, it seems. And that's just kind of the impact of, we are using more water than what's coming in. And I think that's, you know, the real fear is for a lot of, not just the younger people who are around, but the young people who are trying to think about the next generation. The climate crisis is one of the many reasons why a lot of people are delaying the thought of having kids, or even just saying, you know, it's not possible altogether, because they're uncertain about whether or not water will be there for them.
Are there other climate crisis issues that you're comfortable talking about?
Well, we can talk about forest fires, actually. So Colorado Springs is the second highest in spending, behind Boulder, for the city of Colorado, when it comes to forest fire property damage. It's because we got a lot of forest fires here. We're built up against a mountain here in our district, and that's not completely unheard of. Boulder County's, you know, very similar. They're built up against a mountain. We're built up against a mountain. And I think we've developed all the way up to Pikes Peak as much as we possibly can. We have campgrounds on Pikes Peak. We have a donut shop on Pikes Peak. And we live quite literally up against Pikes Peak now. So I don't think it's possible to really expand much more over there. But think about how dangerous it would be if there was a fire now in the Pikes Peak National Forest, or if there is a fire near Fort Carson. How much of our Department of Defense is now going to be turning their resources towards forest fire prevention of digging trenches? And why is it that we now are putting this burden onto the Department of Defense, or even just homeowners? the amount of forest fire damage and risk that we have here, it is likely to displace people. And on top of that, it's going to impact our quality of life, our quality of air. Most people don't even have the financial resources to just pack up everything they have and evacuate if they need to. And what are we going to do if your home does catch on fire and you don't have a home to go back to? The dryness that we have in this district in the summer is also dangerous. So I'm worried about how much more damage there's going to be from every forest fire. What happens when we have the next Black Forest fire here in our district? Are we prepared for it? Do we have the resources for it? And what are we going to do for the families that get displaced?
So when you're in Congress, are you going to make sure there's more federal dollars sent here so that we can rake the forest?
Maybe not rake the forest.
I heard from somebody that that's what needs to be done.
Oh, gosh.
Somebody running for president thinks that. These are kind of treating the symptoms. What about policy that would help keep us from, you know, continuing to flood the atmosphere with carbon dioxide?
Well, that's going to look like not using as much fossil fuel, and it's going to look like using more solar panels. Solar energy is cheaper, and we have the perfect environment here in Colorado to go solar. So when I think about the best renewable energy source, I'm thinking of solar. Now, when I've talked to workers in the field, the biggest concern that I've heard about solar is that it's not a steady employment opportunity necessarily, because once a solar panel is built, it's built. And once the owner of that solar panel gets the energy from it, they're getting the money from that, and the workers necessarily aren't anymore. So we do need to think about the workers when we do move into a climate environment. We need to think about the working class when it comes into relinquishing our control that fossil fuel currently has over us. And we need to focus on building an economy that has the environment in mind. When I've talked to some union representatives, they've actually recommended that we look into nuclear energy. And I'm all for that, so long as the scientists behind it say it's safe, the workers behind it say it's safe, and as long as the data is there and the experts behind it say we're good to go, then I would be okay with it.
Nuclear energy is safe. The problem is with the waste.
Show me where you're going to put that.
I have to say that I did Google whether water comes across the continental divide from the Colorado River Basin to the Arkansas River Basin. And you were correct, Dave.
Ding, ding, ding.
It
ding,
is
ding.
Actually being done, which seems crazier than ever.
It is. Insane.
We're moving water in ridiculous ways.
Yeah. Interesting thing about that continental divide and how water is impacted and also prices. The higher up the continental divide you are, the cleaner your water is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But also the more expensive your gas is going to be. So, you know, you have a trade-off.
So we were talking solar just a moment ago. I noticed that companies like Walmart realized that the best color for a roof is white.
Mm.
Yet all of the new construction in Colorado Springs, with few exceptions, use black. And solar energy, you can modulate it or moderate it just by using a white roof, as Walmart clearly knows. Has that been looked into? Or the reason we use black is because it's cheaper. And when builders build houses, they build as cheaply as possible, and then you can replace it any way you want. But if we just made white roofs cheaper, we would be using solar energy passively.
So what having a white roof does is it has the heat transfer onto the darker black surface, actually. So the reason solar panels are black is because the color black absorbs the most heat.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And white reflects it, so your house will be naturally cooler if you have a white roof.
So the white roof reflecting more heat onto the solar panels makes it a little bit more efficient.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So I think we'd be nuts if we didn't bring up immigration, because that seems to me like the Republican Party's trying to make that the number one issue in this election.
Yeah, without any solutions either. You know, they love to talk about immigration. They don't love to solve immigration. Yeah, let's talk about immigration. So my opponent wants to build a wall, and that's it. It's a very long border, if you haven't noticed, and it has a very diverse ecosystem. It's going to require a lot of different technologies. Rather, it's drone technology, rather it's having electronic gate of sorts, that way you can track when people cross, or rather it's just having a simple checkpoint, or having a bridge over, you know, where is it going to be too dangerous for someone to cross the Rio Grande, for example. it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all solution because our border is very long. And historically speaking, when you have a country that builds a very long, very expensive wall to try and keep another group of people out, it hasn't worked. It's almost like walls are not that amazing. You can go over them. There is a whole network of tunnels that go underneath the wall already designed. You can take any other port of entry. You can fly into the U.S. and overstay your visa. You could sail to the U.S. I mean, for crying out loud, people will put their children on rafts leaving Cuba and send them to the U.S. because that's the best choice they have for their kid, which is horrifying to think about. But when that is a situation we're up against, a wall isn't going to do, I'm not going to use foul language, but a wall isn't going to do anything. What we need and what the individuals who work on our southern border have said that we need are more border security agents, more caseworkers, and more asylum judges. And we desperately need more asylum judges. We desperately need more caseworkers. And we desperately need more border security agents. They have too much on their plate right now. And when it takes decades for an individual to get processed, and when you have to effectively shut down the commerce and transfer between two sides of the border because there's too many people that's crossed in one day, you're impacting the economy, you're impacting the lives of the people that live near the border, and you just kind of cut empathy out of the situation at a certain point because people are running for their lives. And if we don't have the ability to process them, if we don't have the ability to kind of take them in through a legal port of entry, then we lose track of them. And we're actually making the problem worse when we don't provide the resources that the people who work on the southern border say that we need. You know, that bipartisan immigration bill should have been passed. It just made sense. Everyone got a little bit out of it. We got more border security agents, more caseworkers, more asylum judges. But, I mean, we all know the story about why it didn't pass. And unfortunately, that guy wants to run for president.
Yeah. And so you've mentioned empathy. You've mentioned that in one of the debates. You're not talking about having an open, porous border. You're talking about enforcing our border, but you're not talking about doing it with hate, fear, and cruelty.
No, I don't think that you know, people crossing the border are all rapists, criminals, or trying to sell drugs. And that's what I mean by empathy, is that we need to recognize them as human beings.
Yeah.
Most of the drugs that are coming in through this country are probably coming in through the dark market, which I don't like that the dark market exists. I think a lot of our lives would be better if it just didn't. But that's really what we need to recognize is the reality when it comes to the increase of crime and increase of drugs. It's the dark market, and it's coming in through our mail, not through people crossing a border.
If you're willing to put your child in a raft from Cuba to Miami or Florida coast, that's asylum. I mean, that is seeking asylum. And that's what I've seen. I've lived in Imperial Beach in Chula Vista, right on the border in California with Mexico. And most of the people come across the border legitimately to work in the United States. And then they go back. And some stay for good reasons and stay legally. Yeah, I believe in empathy. And we really do need to look at who we're letting in and what America is all about. You know, if we look at the Statue of Liberty, asylum was what this country was really built on. And every immigrant came here, at least in part, because the situation they were living in their original country was terrible. So we shouldn't lose sight of that.
Yeah. I do fear that our bigotry that we have towards immigrants right now is the American dream kind of losing sight of itself. And I know we're capable of better. I know this is a better country. And I want to see the America that I've always known to be capable come back again.
Well, I think we're running out of time. Is there anything we've left out that you feel like you absolutely must talk about?
Yeah, ballots are out. Everyone needs to vote. I know your ballot's sitting on your kitchen table, or maybe it's in your mailbox, but make sure you get it and fill it out and vote early this year, because between you and me, I think it's going to be an all-nighter. I don't think we're going to know the results of the election on Election Day, but make sure your vote's one of the earliest ones counted, and the sooner you get your vote in, the sooner the county can process it, and the sooner we can figure out the results.
Excellent. Vote early.
Yeah.
Yes.
I heard former President Jimmy Carter voted the minute he could. He wanted to make sure he didn't die before he voted.
That's literally why he voted, yes, because he's on hospice care right now. So, yeah, he did.
Well, if Jimmy Carter made sure to get out the vote, you have no excuse not to.
Good point. Yeah, so if you don't have that ballot by now, then that probably means that you need to get in touch with the county clerk and recorder's office to see if you're really registered or not.
And if you wait until the absolute last minute, is there a way to get a provisional ballot?
You can vote in person. I forgot off the top of my head the last day to register to vote to do it by mail, but there is a deadline. If you want to vote by mail, there is an earlier deadline than Election Day, but you can register to vote on Election Day if you're going to go vote in person.
That's it. And you should never lose sight of that. Even if you're not registered to vote up until Election Day, you can still vote. So please get out there and vote.
I do want to issue a quick reminder to everybody. Right now, Loving the Springs is co-hosted by Al Brody and Dave Gardner, and we're looking actively for a third co-host. And that needs to be somebody who doesn't look and sound and think like the two of us.
That would be better.
Yeah. So if you fit that qualification and you think you might like to take the mic, you can send an email to lovingthespringspodcast@gmail.com.
All right.
Yeah. Could I give a shout out to some of my own events?
Why not?
That's all right. Yeah.
Let's do it.
I have some town halls coming up. I have decided to be a little strategic and the days before Election Day, plan out 4 town halls, one in Peyton, Monument, Fountain, and one in Rock Rim. So if you live in one of those areas or nearby one of those areas and you are an undecided voter listening, come out and see me. I'll answer any questions you have. And most of those town halls will be joint with other candidates as well. They're all in November.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and they're all on my website.
And what's that website?
Riverforcolorado.com.
All right, so be sure to check that out. Okay, upcoming events. Well, we talked about the election. I should mention once again that candidate forums hosted by the League of Women Voters of the Pikes Peak region, you can watch those replays or you can listen to them on the Making Democracy Work podcast later. Just visit lwvppr.org/forums2024.
I just learned about this, but it sounds really good. It's Witches, Warlocks, and Ghouls. It's a bicycle ride in Colorado Springs. It's on October the 26th from 12 to 5. It is family friendly, and it is to benefit Circle of Hope Fund at UC Health Memorial Hospital Foundation. So if you've dealt with cancer or are dealing with cancer, this fund is to help people who may have health insurance for the cancer part, but can't afford because they're not working, getting to and from the hospital or other incidental costs. So it does affect people who are dealing with cancer, and having been there, I can appreciate what they do. So there's an opportunity to help.
Sounds like a good cause. And we'll put information about all these events in the show notes. Also on October 26th, something that Studio 809 Podcasts is hosting, the Colorado Springs Podcast Meetup. It's kind of an initial organizational meeting to get podcasters in the area networking, collaborating, and figuring out what we want to do going forward to help each other out. That's going to be at Stompin' Grounds, which is a great coffee shop in Southeast Colorado Springs, 1:30 to 3:30 in the afternoon. We'll put a link for registration free in the show notes. Don't forget October 30th, the Colorado Springs City Council redistricting public meeting, 3:30 in the afternoon at the City Ad Building. And November 1st, the final documentary screening of 2024 by the Independent Film Society of Colorado. The documentary sounds pretty interesting. Reflections on the Living Dead. It's a feature-length documentary about the making of that classic horror flick, Night of the Living Dead. So that may be kind of fun. And I want to put in a plug for Stargazers. I love Stargazers. Great place to hear music and attend meetings. And at the Stargazers Theater and Event Center on November 1st is the very last, the final performance of Flash Cadillac. Familiar with Flash Cadillac?
Absolutely. I love the music.
Yeah. That band has been around for something like 55 years, and they've decided enough's enough.
Yes. True.
Started by a couple of students at University of Colorado in Boulder.
Wow.
Way
and
back
still
when.
Going.
Still going. But you might not want to miss that. And speaking of Stargazers, on November 8th, Tony Exum Jr. Have you heard Tony Exum Jr.?
I have. Isn't he a jazz artist?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome musician. So not to miss.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening to Loving the Springs. Follow this podcast to keep up on
what's going on,
what's going well,
and what's going wrong.
Share it with your friends, too.
And don't forget to visit Studio809Podcasts.com to check out all of our fine community podcasts. You can find your new favorite local podcast there. We'll catch you next time.
Vote!
Thanks, River, for joining us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival, or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.